Love Sport Radio. On digital radio, online, mobile, and smart speaker. This is Upfront on Love Sport.
You're listening to a podcast edition of The James Gray Show. You can listen to me live every weekday from 1:30 p.m. on Love Sport Radio, on DAB Digital, online, or on your Alexa smart speaker. And if you're listening to the podcast, do leave us a rating and a review on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Love Sport.
Now, I want to talk a little bit about Eden Hazard as well. We have to, because last night looked like it might be a farewell.
Do you expect to be there next season, or is this a goodbye, Eden?
Yeah, I think it's a goodbye. My dream was to play in Premier League. I did this for 7 years in the biggest club in the world. So now maybe it's time for a new challenge.
It really is starting to look like time to say goodbye for Eden Hazard. Look, I've loved having him in the Premier League. From a neutral perspective, it's been brilliant to watch someone like that in the Premier League. I love this clarinet version. Wonderful, isn't it? Ennio Morricone, who needs him? You know, 100 times capped by Belgium. He's played 250 times in the league alone for Chelsea. You can't say he hasn't been a fabulous servant to the club. There's been the odd fallout with managers. There was the 2015-16 season when he only scored 6 goals. Yeah, he's not been perfect, but who among us can claim to have been perfect? I think Chelsea fans have to accept that he's going now, and they shouldn't be sad that he's going. They should be glad that he came in the first place at the age of 21 from Lille as just someone making his way in the game. And what's he done for Chelsea? Well, I'll tell you what he's done for Chelsea. He's won the Premier League twice. He's won the FA Cup. He's won the Europa League twice. He's won the League Cup. You can't say he hasn't given his all for Chelsea Football Club. And now he's got an opportunity, frankly, the opportunity of a lifetime. We all dream of being footballers. I know we do. It's one of those things we all live to be. But he's got the chance to go and do it at one of the biggest, most historic clubs in the world, under the man whose name he had on the back of his shirt as a kid. Zinedine Zidane, probably the best footballer ever, certainly in the conversation. And now you want to deny Eden Hazard that opportunity. And if Chelsea get 115 million quid for him, and that's hardly romantic, I know, but if they do get a bit of cash for him, then that's great too, and he will leave a hero. He should be an all-time hero at Chelsea. And if that is his last contribution to the club, 2 goals and an assist in a Europa League final, I think it would be a worthy one. I hope he comes out as one of the greatest players Chelsea have ever had, because he is right up there with those people. Just look at his goal record, his contribution on the pitch, the way he plays the game, and also, of course, the trophies that he has won. Lifted the Europa League trophy last night, along with the rest of them, frankly, including Rob Green, who went full John Terry by putting on his full kit, which I believe you are required to do. I want to run through Chelsea's performance last night in the meantime. Done a little bit of player ratings. I know people love these and love to hate them as well. Eden Hazard, of course, the star of the show. I had to give him a 9. Picked out Pedro for the second goal. A really clinical penalty. He obviously knows Petr Cech quite well and knows that Petr Cech knows him quite well, which creates lots of different levels to that particular penalty. But he just waited long enough, saw Cech move and rolled it the other way. Really good penalty. I've given him a 9. I've also given Olivier Giroud a 9. I thought he did actually... I know the Arsenal defence aren't difficult to terrorise. Frankly, I think the idea of playing 90 minutes terrorises most of them. But Olivier Giroud knew exactly where the pockets of space were. A really brilliant diving header for that first goal as well, and picked up the assist for Hazard's second. So he gets a 9 from me as well. Pedro, always a sort of puzzling player, because he seems to contribute almost nothing for a while and then comes up with something. Very nearly became, I think, the difference at times, but just goes through spells in games where he disappears. I've given him a 7 because he beat his man enough. I don't think he played badly, but I don't think he was going to be the difference maker either. Kind of a running theme through this Chelsea team, I thought. Lots of players, in the words of Bill Belichick, just doing their job. N'Golo Kante was an injury scare in the run-up to the game, but didn't seem to stop him running. Frankly, I don't think wild horses could stop N'Golo Kante running. You know, he used to run to training at Leicester. He's like, well, I live quite close to the training ground, so I might as well just run to training. Honestly, he's a completely insane person. But yeah, giving him a 7 as well. An important block from Lucas Torreira stood out as a moment where he made a real difference. Mateo Kovacic, similarly, doesn't often light up the world with his performances, but I thought he played well last night. Half-decent range of passing and did a job for Chelsea in the middle of the pitch. Jorginho, I thought, was unspectacular at best last night. At worst, maybe ineffectual. You know, this job that he has, a bit of a water carrier, it's okay. I didn't think he did it too badly, but I didn't think he did it brilliantly either. Moving into the defence, Emerson Palmieri, just this sort of weirdly Jekyll and Hyde performance, really bright going forward, and I've given him an 8 for his attacking, but a 6 for his defending. So I give him a 7, but it's a sort of a schizophrenic 7, because there very much are two personalities, as there were to his performance last night. At right back, Cesar Azpilicueta, probably the busiest man in the Chelsea defence, to be honest. I always think Arsenal look more threatening down the left with Sead Kolasinac. They were legitimately threatening on that flank, certainly in the first half anyway. Obviously, the less said about the second half, the better in terms of Arsenal. But yeah, I thought he had a decent game. Azpilicueta dealt with it, didn't allow too many chances, a 7 for him, just as I gave Christensen and Luiz. You know, Aubameyang and Lacazette are a tough pair to deal with. They offer such different challenges, each of them. I thought Christensen and Luiz dealt with them pretty well. Luiz, in particular, was better on the ball, kept his elbows in check, having smashed Gonzalo Higuain in the face during training this week. And then, right at the back, keeper Arrizabalaga. Really not impressive. You know, he's obviously a young guy, and Chelsea moved for him earlier than they would have wanted to because of Thibaut Courtois, but I would have thought they'd be worried by the performance he gave last night. He was a bit flappy. Arsenal probably should have had a penalty, to be fair, when he caught Lacazette, and he got away with that. I've given him a 5. There was nothing he could do about the goal, obviously, a brilliant strike, but I wasn't terribly impressed by the performance that keeper Arrizabalaga gave last night, so I've given him a 5. And Maurizio Sarri, sartorial elegance or lack thereof aside, I thought he set the team up well. They were obviously brilliant in the second half. For as much as Arsenal didn't give them much in terms of a challenge, I thought he did set them up in the right way. So I've given him an 8, I suppose. I don't necessarily like giving managers these ratings, but he's just about getting Chelsea playing the right way. Love
Sport. I think we are a big team. I think Arsenal is a big name, and a lot of players want to play here. We are in one process to be strong in our idea. To be strong in our way.
Unai Emery there, relatively incomprehensible as usual, but I think he's mostly positive despite a defeat to Chelsea in Baku last night. We've got Lee Harper on the line, ex-goalkeeper for Arsenal and QPR, among others. Lee, as you know, producer Mike is an Arsenal fan, and we've sort of not been allowed to talk about Arsenal very much this morning. How are you feeling about the game last night?
Afternoon, James. Extremely disappointed. You know, being an Arsenal fan myself, I thought they started the game okay. Actually started the first half an hour very well, and Chelsea sort of got into it the second half. And from my point of view, I find it very difficult now to feel that Arsenal are going to get anywhere near one getting back into the Champions League. I know we're pushing close every season, but I think the investment that's required is not going to come the way. And I think Mr. Kroenke is the one where the issue really, really lies with all the problems at the football club.
He wasn't even there last night, I understand. Josh was, but Stan wasn't. Do you think that's sort of typical of how he feels about Arsenal at the moment?
I think it's just a moneymaker for him. And, you know, the fans have to suffer whilst he's not prepared. You know, he runs it as a business. He's got to be profitable. There's only a certain set amount of money. I mean, the reports are saying that there's 40 million available for investment next year. I know, obviously, the finances are going to be down due to the fact that we're not going to be in the Champions League again next season, and that's going to have some sort of effect on the budget. But he's not the man that wants to put his vast amount of money into taking the club into competition with the likes of Man City and Liverpool, and £40 million is only going to buy in today's market. It's not going to go out and get them what they need. You know, they need so much change through the spine of that team. You know, a change of an impact player like a Virgil van Dijk they cost you £70 million, not £40 million. And unfortunately, Arsenal are not missing one, two, three. They're missing a few, I would say. And, you know, as an Arsenal fan, it's disappointing knowing that the likelihood is that Unai Emery is not going to get the backing that he needs to transform this team.
As you mentioned there, Lee, that the budget's going to restrict what sort of players you can bring in. Do you think Unai Emery says that it doesn't matter that they've missed out on Champions League qualification in terms of attracting players? People still want to come and play for Arsenal. Do you think that's still true? Do you think that it is still a pull to come and play at the Emirates?
I'd like to think that it still is a pull. It's a fantastic football club. And the potential, the setup, and everything's there for them. The problem is, I feel that if you looked over the last few years, and obviously missing out for the last couple of seasons now on Champions League qualification, they have a history of usually getting there and thereabouts. I think top players are now be looking and be wondering whether or not other good players are going to be brought in around them. You know, it could be one player comes in at Arsenal, but you know they've lost a good player in Aaron Ramsey. They may get one in, and they may lose. They may not be able to add more than one, and they need more than one, and that might be in the mind of somebody that's going to, you know, want to have top players alongside him and want to win things. And all players want to win things. You're in it to win everything you enter, every competition you enter. You're in to win. And a top player may be thinking that he's not going to be getting the support that he needs with other players around him.
Obviously, they've finished fifth and not won a trophy this season. That's the reality of the situation. But they've got 7 more points than last year. Do you think this has been a successful season for Unai Emery at Arsenal? And do you think he will get plenty of time to continue fixing things?
Well, I hope he does. I mean, I think, yes, I think you look at the points tally. He's done, you know, he's done well with that. And some of the performances, though, I feel are down to the players. It's a mentality issue. The players are just, some of them are just not up to the level of you know, previous teams that Arsenal have set up and had. And like I said, I feel that, you know, he's not going to get the backing that he needs to make Arsenal that force that they once were. And I think if you looked at Arsenal team, at the Arsenal squad and team now, and you looked at the likes of Man City and Liverpool, Tottenham, how many of those Arsenal players would you say would go and walk into those three other teams? And it hurts me to say that, because all I want is Arsenal to be successful and want Arsenal to succeed. But I just feel that there are players there that are just, they're never going to be in the realms of players that are going to deliver titles and lots of trophies to Arsenal Football Club.
One guy whose name has been thrown around as a potential Arsenal signing this summer is Bournemouth's Ryan Fraser. Obviously been hugely productive, lots of assists. Do you think he's obviously not in that Liverpool Man City top echelon of players, but do you think that he is still someone who can add something to the Arsenal squad?
Well, I think Arsenal have got some good up-and-coming young players, and I was thinking about it myself. You know, the likes of Willock, who come on and run himself into the ground and really gives a lot of effort. And I think Ashley Maitland-Niles as well, who unfortunately made a clumsy error last night. But what young players need is they need some guidance on the pitch from experienced seasoned professionals. And I've said this before, when I made my debut for Arsenal, in the one and only game I played at the very end before I left to join QPR, I remember at Southampton, I come and took a cross right on the edge of the box, I come a mile, and I was so excited, and I just wanted to bowl the ball out and get caught up in the moment of the game. And I had someone like a Tony Adams who could just say to me, hold on a minute, calm yourself down, enjoy it, you know. And like last night, is he going to have someone at the right time to say to him, listen, you don't, you know, that was clumsy, don't do that again. And having those big-time players, big experienced players, and you think they would have that with the likes of Koscielny, but they need guidance. They're good quality young players, and for them to develop, they need good players around them. I mean, you look at the likes of Cesc Fabregas when he came into the Arsenal team, and the team, the players that he had around him to help him, you know, to mould him into the player that he'd become. And I think they need the right mix. And I'm not saying I wouldn't want Arsenal to go and sign someone like that, but Maitland-Niles, Willocks, Nketiah, can we develop those into the top players that potentially could be? I don't think they'll turn into those players unless they have the guidance of other top seasoned pros around them. And Arsenal have got to get the balance right. And the balance being right is the investment, and the investment is likely not going to come from Mr. Kroenke in his past showings.
Well, Lee, I'm sorry to leave it on such a miserable note, but after a 4-1 defeat like that, I'm not sure we can say much more. Thank you so much for joining us. That's Lee Harper there, an Arsenal fan through and through, and an ex-Arsenal goalkeeper as well. Now, of course, there is two sides to every coin. For every game, there is a loser and a winner. Ben Anson's still a loser, but today he is, I suppose, a winner. He's a Chelsea fan. He's, of course, my other producer, and he is back from Baku. Ben, how tired are you?
I'm extremely exhausted. I got back about 10, 15 minutes ago and literally just came through the door. exhausted, but I'm so, so happy.
All worth it. I think you said before you went, it wouldn't have been worth the £1,000 flight and the, you know, absurd travel if you'd lost. I'm sure you were glad to get the victory anyway.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's just, like you said there, the amount of money actually spent on it's absurd. Looking back at it, I can't believe I actually spent that much going to the game. But
have you made it up to your missus yet?
Ex-missus. I think I'm gonna have to start picking up some extra shifts, so I'm not just the James Gray producer. I think I'll be a few other shows producer.
Oh dear. Tell me about, you know, we talked a lot in the run-up about the difficulty of Azerbaijan, the empty stadium. Tell me about the match day experience. For a start, how empty was it?
It was pretty empty. You know what? It wasn't as empty as I expected. And that was mainly because we were filled with the locals, literally everyone. Well, I say locals, but actually there's people from the surrounding countries. There was the Iraqi Chelsea supporters group. They turned up in their numbers. There were just people. There was hardly really any people from England that actually did travel. I couldn't tell up above me because obviously I was quite low down, but I saw the Arsenal end. There was a patch in the top right corner. There was just the rows and rows of empty seats. It was really, really bad to see. And not just bad for Chelsea and Arsenal supporters seeing that, but UEFA as well. You want to sell out a cup final. Mm. You want it. This is your competition. You want to sell it. And it doesn't really look good if there's a load of empty seats. Nonetheless, it was a good atmosphere chanting with the 2,000 or so Chelsea people that did go. But it's a bit odd, just sitting with people. Obviously, they're wearing their Chelsea shirts, but most of them don't know the songs because they don't go every week. There was a situation where I think there was a guy with a drum hit. He was trying to do the Icelandic,
the thunder clap chant.
And just someone went out and went, no, Chelsea do not do drums. And he quickly sat straight back down.
Is
and,
that a thing? Yeah, he brought that. Did Chelsea not do drums?
Well, according to this man, they don't. No. Okay. It's all from the heart. No drums.
Okay, I'll take your word for it. And how do you? We saw lots of videos back home of Azerbaijani police inspecting Arsenal fans for Mkhitaryan shirts. How did you find the authorities while you were out there? Did you trouble them at all?
No. I was on my best behaviour as always, James. No, I didn't really see anything like that. To be honest, they were really good. The police, actually. You felt like royalty out there. As soon as you get there, you've got police escorts absolutely everywhere. There was a shuttle bus that ran between town and the stadium. And no matter where you went, you were escorted by a police car at the front. Green man across the road for people. Nope, they had to stop because the police car was saying, hold on, nope, we've got Chelsea and Arsenal fans coming through. Literally just treated like royalty.
Oh, it sounds all right then. You'll do it all again when they go to Baku next year then, will you?
Oh, God, I don't want to go back. No. You know what? It's a really nice city. It's on the seafront. It's got a nice pier. You know, really nice weather there. So, you know, I can see why people do go there. I wouldn't probably recommend £1,000 to go there.
Was it a good way, sorry to interrupt you, Ben, was it a good way to say goodbye to Eden Hazard as well?
We knew he was going to go, and obviously the quotes coming out after the game just triple or quadruple confirmed that he definitely was going to go. There was only one way to see it off right, and that was obviously to bring a trophy home. You know, a great performance once again. The link up with Giroud for that fourth goal. Where did that come from Giroud? But, you know, Hazard with the movement and everything was absolutely brilliant. Just that whole second half performance as well. I don't know whether Eden Hazard or Sarri teamed, or most likely Eden Hazard, because Sarri team talks don't tend to work, inspired that performance. But I haven't seen us play that well in, well, all season.
Ben, thanks so much for ringing us in. I'll see you back at work next week once you've finally recovered and got your voice back. Safe journey in. It's obviously a lot easier than the way you got to Baku. Ben Anson there, our very own, of course, who's just got back from Baku. And what do we do when our producers go on holiday? We get them on the phone as soon as possible. And regularly, we, of course, have Guy Watts, who's not on holiday. He is out in Madrid covering the Champions League final for Love Sport Radio. You can hear from him throughout the week on the station. He'll be catching up with fans out there and all sorts. We're all just stuck here. We don't get to go to Madrid. We have to sit around in the rain and watch.
Love Sport.
Arsene, what was your favourite bit of the game last night?
I didn't see it.
But you must have seen some funny moments in the game.
I didn't see it.
All right, what about that new Zac Efron film?
I didn't see it.
Well, at least I was watching, Arsene. I was indeed watching in an O'Neill's in Chinatown. It was very weird, very strange. A lot of TVs. But I watched it again when I got home. It made sense to. And there were a few things that you might have missed. Now, I often criticise managers for what they wear, their sartorial choices. Pep's knitwear, for example, is coming for a lot of stick from me this season. But he does insist on wearing a knitted snood and a knitted cardigan. I mean, come on. It's not that cold in Manchester. Well, I suppose it is, actually. But Maurizio Sarri takes the biscuit and all the awards in this particular department. Obviously, he's following in some pretty large footsteps. Tricky ones, you might say. Jose Mourinho and Antonio Conte, both good-looking men, you know, in their 50s. I think we can accept that. And they both wear a suit pretty well as well. But Sarri doesn't even, frankly, make an effort. He stalks the touchline at Stamford Bridge wearing an ill-fitting T-shirt, weirdly sort of clinging tracksuit bottoms and chewing cigarette butts. But I can proudly announce that last night he did at least get some new clothes. He did get something different to wear. It still didn't fit, but it was clean, it was shiny, and he was seen wearing it and smiling with the trophy. So that's something, I suppose. He'd also come prepared, because before they'd even lifted the trophy, and you might have missed this, he had the cigars out. Maurizio Sarri, never knowingly undersmoked.
I didn't see it.
Now, it's been a good couple of years for Olivier Giroud, but maybe just have a listen to some of the conflicting things he was saying last night.
I left so many friends in Arsenal. This club changed my life, basically, you know, gave me the opportunity to live my dream, you know, my dream comes true in playing in Premier League. And, you know, I improved so much and I owe them a lot. So I will never forget. That's why I didn't want to celebrate.
Now, what you can hear there is Olivier Giroud, the man who, since he left Arsenal, has won the FA Cup, the World Cup, now the Europa League, celebrating a bit of revenge over the Gunners. That was clearly at the forefront of his mind. I often criticise fans for winning a game and then spending the whole time singing about other clubs. For example, watching Tottenham on a Wednesday night, you play Thursday. Well, you know the rest. You know, it's just get over it. Talk about your own team. Stop singing about other ones. Well, it seems that players are doing it as well. You heard there, Olivier Giroud on the bus out the stadium shouting, "Thank you, Arsenal." It wasn't entirely clear, frankly, whether he meant thank you for gifting them the victory or thank you for letting him leave the club in the first place.
I didn't see it.
I'm sure there's plenty of drinking in Baku yesterday. The Chelsea fans before the game, the Arsenal fans before the game, the Chelsea players after the game, the Arsenal players during the game, frankly. Based on that second half performance, I think they might have been on it at half time, to be perfectly honest. But David Zabacosta, I don't know if he's a brilliant boozer, but I think his technique needs a little work. What you might not have spotted last night is, while he was waiting for the trophy presentation, he managed to squirt water nowhere near his own mouth. He missed his entire head, in fact. Very poor indeed.
I didn't see it.
Stan Kroenke, did you see him? Nope, because he wasn't there. Stan Kroenke missed his club's major European trophy final. He was, of course, the owner. He couldn't make it. He sent Josh Kroenke in his place, but I don't imagine Arsenal fans will have been very impressed by the substitution, frankly, given that some might say Stan Kroenke's been a bit of a an absentee owner. Roman Abramovich did make it, by the way, so that's something. Mostly because he's actually allowed in Azerbaijan. But the players didn't seem that keen to hear from him, because David Luiz said afterwards that he came into the dressing room, and when he was trying to speak, the guys started throwing things at him, so he left. So there was no speech from their dear leader.
I didn't see it.
I mean, that is just baffling that Roman Abramovich came into the dressing room and ended up not even addressing his players. I want to know what they were throwing at him and why. Because I'll be honest, no matter how good a day I've had at work, no matter how much money I might have earned my own, my CEO, I don't tend to start throwing things at him under any circumstance. I can only think of one way that would end.
This is Love Sport.
And of course, last night it wasn't cricket, it was football we were talking, because it was Chelsea versus Arsenal in the Europa League final. Chelsea triumphed, much to the delight, I'm sure, of Ollie Salt, who's a football reporter for Daily Star and a Chelsea fan, of course. He's on the line now. Ollie, never in doubt, was it?
It wasn't, James, no. You know, I think the game started off quite cagey last night. The atmosphere in Baku, quite a strange location to place the final. A lot of people weren't happy with it. I think that was the reason why both sides took a while to get going, especially Chelsea. But towards the end of the first half, it looked like Chelsea were just starting to take control of the game. It was a shame when the half-time whistle actually came for them. Then, of course, you know, everyone knows what happened in the second half. You know, they blew Arsenal away. And I'm still not entirely sure if it was Chelsea's brilliance or Arsenal's diabolical display, which led to, in the end, a quite emphatic scoreline.
Sarri's now won the Europa League and finished third in his first season. He's qualified for the Champions League twice, if you like. And yet he's had most of the season been booed and told to leave at Stamford Bridge. Surely this has been a successful year for him now, hasn't it?
I'm not sure if it's hard, because Chelsea fans have such a high standards because of simply what they've achieved over the last decade. At the start of the season, if you'd have offered the club third place and a trophy, you know, it would have been taken straight away. But the end results don't really tell the story of the whole season, because, you know, Chelsea have been painful to watch for the majority of it. You know, heavy defeats at Man City, 6-0. The Bournemouth 4-0 was a disgrace of a performance. And, you know, the thing that people have to remember from the outside looking in is there's no reason for Chelsea fans to, you know, act with prejudice towards Sarri or have another reason to dislike him. You know, it's purely on what they've seen on the pitch. And I've been wishing for Sarri to leave Stamford Bridge for a while now. I have to say, I wouldn't be totally against him now staying next season. But the only thing I would say is, with the two-window transfer ban, I don't see how he'll be able to bolster his squad to the extent he needs to clearly take the team forward next season. I think if you're going to get someone in to really stay for the long haul now, I think perhaps it needs to be a change.
I mean, you say he's going to struggle to bolster his squad. There are about 400 players coming back to Chelsea this summer after a season out on loan. Tammy Abraham, for example, do you not think he could add something to the Chelsea squad now?
I think for a lot of them, Tammy included, I think it might be beneficial. It might have been more beneficial for them to maybe enjoy a loan spell at a lesser Premier League side before then being chucked in at the deep end, if you like, at Chelsea. But as you said, the transfer window ban is, you know, perhaps they're going to have to, that's going to be the only option for them, because especially up front, I know Giroud had a decent game last night, took his goal really well. He signed a new contract, so he's going to be around next season. But I'm not sure Gonzalo Higuain is. So Tammy might be needed just purely on the fact that there might not be any other options for them next season.
Do you think any of the others, I think of, you know, someone like Mason Mount, for example, do you think it is too soon for him to go into the Chelsea first team? In fact, will he ever be good enough for the Chelsea first team?
Personally, I think Mason Mount is showing that for sure one day he'll be able to come in and make an impact. I've been really impressed in the brief time I've had watching him at Derby this season. But, you know, who knows? It might be time for the club to move in a different direction and you know, begin to put faith in these young stars that are doing so well for the academy. You know, the success in the FA Youth Cups over the last decade, you know, goes to show that there's talent there. Maybe it's time to use them. But the only doubt I'd have linking that back to Sarri is I'm not sure if he would be the right man to get the best out of those young players. I think, if anything, he would probably need to go and make some two or three significant signings in the summer window to really go and push his push his ideas on even further next season. I think if you're going to go down that route of putting faith in the youth players, I personally think, and it's a controversial take, but I think Frank Lampard would be ideal.
We have to talk about Eden Hazard because he essentially confirmed that he's leaving last night. I think we've all known that for rather longer. Will you begrudge his departure at all, or are you just sort of saying, well, fair enough, you've given us a lot and we can't really argue with you wanting to go to Real Madrid?
No, I think that's the general feeling that, among Chelsea fans. There's no bitterness towards Eden Hazard at all. You know, myself, I thought Chelsea were extremely fortunate to keep hold of him for this season, to be honest. I thought it was nailed on that he would have got his dream move to Real Madrid last year. But, you know, listen, he completely deserves it. He's been here for 6 years now, or 7 years, and, you know, he's been look at the likes of Thibaut Courtois, other big names in Europe that when they don't get their own way, they throw their toys out of the pram. Hazard's been, you know, his attitude's been exemplary. Even with the fact that he clearly really wanted to move to the Bernabeu last summer, what's he done? He's put his head down again this season, produced his best goal scoring return, and, you know, he's finally going to get it this summer, so good luck to him.
And just finally, obviously, Christian Pulisic is going to finally sort of complete his move to Chelsea next season. Have you got any optimism that he is the kind of player who can start to fill those boots?
I have a fear about that with Hazard going and the transfer ban looking like it's going to be in place this summer, there's a slight worry that Pulisic is perhaps going to have too much pressure on his shoulders, maybe, with Hazard heading out the door. But for sure, Pulisic has the potential at some point. He's only 20 years old, so it's no way is it a like-for-like replacement now. But in the future, you know, I'm sure he'll be able to maybe reach the heights Hazard has. I'm excited to see how Pulisic will get on.
I mean, Hazard was only 21 when he came to Chelsea, so stranger things have happened. Ollie, always a pleasure. Thanks for joining me here on the James Gray Show. Ollie Salt there, football reporter for the Daily Star and a Chelsea fan. It is goodbye, Hazard, but I think it'd be quite... You can't begrudge him leaving. He's going to go and join his boyhood hero at one of the most famous clubs in the world. Who wouldn't do it?
This is Love Sport.
It's not just football, it's not just cricket, it's not just boxing, it's tennis too, because we're in the midst of the French Open, and our man in Paris, George Belshaw of Metro.co.uk and the co-host of the Love Tennis podcast with my good self, is on the line. Oh, sorry, am I not allowed to plug my own podcast on my own show, Mike? Honestly. George, Mike's being sassy, can we deal with it?
No, please plug away. Love Tennis Podcast, Love Tennis Podcast.
Yeah, and you can follow Love Tennis Pod on Twitter as well. No, don't make faces at me. Right, George, let's talk about tennis. Carl Edmund out. Nightmare draw, frankly. I thought Shardy's a good player in the first round, and then he runs into a clay specialist in Pablo Cuevas, didn't he?
Yeah, and he would have had Dominic Thiem next as well, so it wasn't going to get any better than this. You know, Cuevas is a good player. We've just been in to press with Kyle now. He's this knee problem's potentially a long-term worry as well, I have to say. I mean, it's something he's been struggling with since the Paris Masters last year. You might remember he was struggling a bit before getting ready for Australia and then took a bit of time off, went back to challenges. So, I mean, he says he doesn't need surgery or anything like that, but he's also very non-committal on playing Wimbledon. I mean, he seems to think he's going to go onto the grass and play it, but he's saying he still can't be sure. So, yeah, it's all a bit up in the air with Kyle, but as you well know, he's not always the most charismatic and well put across person. So it's quite difficult to gauge exactly what's going on with him, to be perfectly frank.
Knee injury, retiring two sets down. Do you think if he'd been two sets up, he would have retired, or is this a chicken and egg? Was he struggling to compete because of the injury?
Yeah, I mean, look, I wouldn't like to say either way, but I think it was pretty clear he wasn't going to go on and win that match, which probably made him think, well, bugger this then, I'm going to damage my grass court season at this stage and may as well just call it quits. But I mean, you're right, if it was as serious a problem as he's kind of making out, then he probably would have been pulling out against team had he gone on and won it anyway. So hard to know, but yeah, I'm sure there's an element of truth what you're trying to say there.
Not great news for British hopes, but good news for Joanna Konta. Yesterday, she came through Lauren Davis in three sets with the odd wobble, but it wouldn't be a Joe match if there wasn't the odd wobble. How impressed have you been with her transformation on clay? She's never won a main draw match at the French Open until this year.
Yeah, I mean, it's been utterly terrific, this set of performances on clay. I think she'd won something like five matches across two seasons before this year, so you know, she's already probably up to about 14 wins this year after runs in Rabat and Rome as well. And the other good thing for her to say, I mean, good's maybe harsh in the from the perspective of Kiki Bertens, but from Konta's side, you know, Bertens pulling out ill yesterday has suddenly opened this draw up pretty nicely for her. You know, I think coming into it, we thought she might struggle to go beyond round three. We'd take that as a good result. But now, you know, looking at the players who lie in wait in round three and then potentially round four, you have to think Joe Konta could go to the quarterfinals, which, you know, sounds like that's a heresy even leaving my mouth, really.
The women's draw is always pretty open. And, you know, I was doing the tennis show on Love Sport last night, every Wednesday, 7 p.m, with Abigail Johnson and Anna Smith. And I was saying, well, come on, pick a winner from the women's draw. And it's any one of about 15. Who's impressed you over the first couple of days, George? Who do you fancy to win the French Open, if not Serena? Obviously, you can't pick her.
Yeah, I mean, well, I rather boringly went for Simona Halep in my preview.
I remember. Very boring.
It's just so difficult, though, isn't it? I mean, honestly, you could put your finger down the drawer and say she's going to win it. I mean, Garbin Muguruza, who's been completely out of form, has turned up here and looked kind of red hot. So it wouldn't surprise me if someone like she just went through and did it. But before the tournament, I thought she's not got a hope in hell, really. So it's just so hard to say. I don't personally think Serena will do it. I just don't think she'll be fit enough to get through seven matches. But if she keeps powering through them like she's done today, I mean, she's blown Kurumi Nara aside in a little over an hour. So if she keeps going at that rate, you know, maybe she can go through it because she's got an extra day's rest. You know, and she's pretty good at killing these matches quickly, even on clay. So just have to wait and see. But yeah, I'll stick with Halep for the time being. She'll probably go out now.
Get off the fence, George. I want a deep dive here. I want like an Anastasia Sevastova. I want someone right out of the left field.
Well, Ash Barty's going pretty well. She's someone who could maybe go far.
She's played quite well on clay this year as well, hasn't she?
Yeah, she's playing well on everything this year. She was another one who had a little injury problem just before this, but she seems to be okay. So
good. All right, Ash Barty. Thank you, George. I managed to squeeze a half-decent prediction out of you. Now, what about the men's draw? Obviously, Djokovic is in action just now. He's cruising through. Alexander Zverev is, I think, possibly going to make it through as well in straight sets, which is almost unheard of at the French Open. But Dominic Thiem hasn't been perfect for probably the best clay court player outside the top three, isn't he?
Yeah, definitely. It was a real struggle today. He did well to avoid going to five. He dropped a set in his first round as well. The one thing I would say about Thiem is, you know, you can be a bit kind of Wawrinka-esque, where he just needs to kind of straighten out a few things in the opening round. I think that's true of a lot of one-handed backhanders in general. You know, Tsitsipas, I was watching him a bit yesterday, and he didn't seem to quite have his rhythm yet. So I think, you know, as long as he's getting through these early hiccups, shouldn't be too problematic in the long run for team. And I think he only played for 2.5 hours, even though it was a long, on paper, a long four setter. So his body shouldn't be too bad. I think he'll find his rhythm and suddenly start to get very dangerous. But, you know, as we've said, Cuevas is a decent clay court player. So if he's not on his game, that could be a tricky one as well.
We've done well not to talk about Roger Federer in 8-odd minutes talking about the French Open, but I suppose we should. He's back on clay. What have you made of him coming back to Roland Garros?
Yeah, he's playing well. I mean, again, it's quite hard to really gauge a level because he's played two complete walkovers, to be perfectly frank, so far. It's not been the kind of toughest names on paper. That's maybe a little harsh on Sonego, but, you know, I'd never heard of Oscar Otte before this tournament.
God, you're so knowledgeable, George. I'm really impressed.
he's doing his job, as you'd expect. Casper Ruud's up next. He's shown a little bit of form so far on the clay, but, you know, the draw seems to be opening up a lot for these top guys. Not that it ever really needs to open up, but, I mean, you know, some of the seeded players that were due to meet all seem to kind of be dropping out. So I think we're looking at him getting to the quarterfinals to face one of Tsitsipas or Wawrinka. And that for me will be the first real test and a matchup I'm sure we'd all love to see, a kind of double one-handed backhand extravaganza, regardless of which one gets set.
So much one-handed backhand. George, I think you've been talking up Rafael Nadal and Novak Djokovic in an effort to hedge your bets, but at the moment, which one are you picking to win this tournament overall?
Yeah, I mean, again, I went for Rafa before the tournament, and that felt like a 51% to a 49% choice. I think Novak's playing better. I'll just put that out there. I think he's around. We were talking to Boris Becker this morning, actually, and he said Novak's the only one who's found his level right now, and I think he's right. You know, Nadal's still sort of looking for it here. He's had very kind of routine matches so far, but he'll need to be quite sharp when he plays Goffin next, so that'll be a first real test of his credentials. But I mean, I'm expecting those two to be in the final. I think I'd be quite shocked if they didn't both get in the final. The only man I see upsetting that, well, the only two men I see upsetting the apple cart would be, you know, Dominic Thiem and Tsitsipas, really. But at the minute, I'd probably lean towards Djokovic now, 51-49. But I suppose I'll have to stick with my original pre-tournament prediction of Nadal.
Oh, no, you're allowed to change. You just have to take an actual opinion. That's all, George. Nothing more. Right, I'll let you get off to some Vin Rouge and some baguettes for lunch, no doubt. And maybe a petit nap this afternoon. I'll catch up with you soon. George Belshaw there of metro.co.uk and also the co-host of the Love Tennis podcast with my good self.
This is Love Sport.
Now, producer Mike has joined me in the studio. He's dressed in black today for the death of Arsenal Football Club, which is more than appropriate. After yet another miserable performance, Mike, you've done your player ratings for the Arsenal team, and how many ones and twos are there?
I mean, mostly. I don't think, honestly, I think the highest is a six, which is very, very, very
Who
nice.
Is your six for?
My six for Petr Cech. Because I think he was actually one of the performers that that stood out. He talked a good game before, you know, but before the game, talking about how the pressure at Arsenal is not as good. And we thought, actually, is that him bad-mouthing the club? But I don't think it was. I think Petr Cech's a very honest man. But in terms of his performance yesterday, he kept the score down, really. Saved, crucially, from Olivier Giroud. And it's a fitting send-off, really, for a professional and, you know, for many, one of the Premier League's best keepers. So,
900 professional games, man.
Yeah.
900 professional games. Let's move on to your back, well, defenders anyway.
I don't know how many of them
defended, but a back three, I suppose.
Yeah, and we'll start with a centre-back. So from the top, Sokratis, very nervy, and he did calm down a little bit, but he wasn't the kind of composed player that you need next to youngsters. And it's what
he's Greek, Mike. What do you expect? come on. I mean, you're part Greek Cypriot. I have Greek family as well.
There's nothing composed about Greek
they're
people.
They're passionate. Yeah. They're passionate people.
Yeah, too passionate. And it's not what... It, actually, we spoke to Lee Harper, former Arsenal goalkeeper, earlier, and he was saying how if you're going to introduce the young players, which I think they should next season, you need them next to experienced pros, and that you need composure, and that's something that Sokratis doesn't have. And yeah, I mean, he was getting torn to shreds by Hazard, as with the rest of the back three. So I'm actually going to make it easy. I'm going to give Sokratis, Koscielny and Monreal all fours.
Wow.
Yeah,
I
all
mean,
of them
they
across
four
the
goals.
Board.
Yeah. Look, Chelsea's movement was good. Giroud did last night what I think he can do at his best, which is interchange with someone like Eden Hazard and really create space. But obviously that only happens about three times a season. So, you know, I wouldn't want to take anything away from the Chelsea attack, albeit Arsenal defended poorly. But that's not new, is it?
No, it's nothing new at all. And, I mean, it's so difficult to defend against Hazard. So you have to keep that in mind. And Giroud, you know, he's a World Cup winner. I mean, he's one of the best at link-up play I've seen. I mean, he was such a talent for Arsenal in that sense, and such an unselfish player, I think you can say. Even though he didn't score any goals at the World Cup, you know, he was such a vital player for France. We'll just move across to the fullbacks. Ainsley Maitland-Niles, I feel really sorry for him because, as I was saying earlier, he's not been helped by his defenders at all. He was good going forward, but defensively, he got torn to shreds by Emerson, Palmieri and Hazard.
And that keeps happening, doesn't it?
Yeah,
I mean,
it does.
He got sent off, obviously, earlier this season. And
yeah.
He just seems a bit harebrained. He doesn't strike me as a defender at all.
Yeah, no, I mean, he's not a natural defender. I mean, he's one of them players that kind of isn't quite good enough to play in midfield, so he gets shipped out to fullback, a bit like Trent, but Trent is obviously a much better version of him at the moment anyway. And yeah, I mean, he was left out to dry, obviously gave away the penalty, which was really the nail in the coffin if it wasn't already over at two. Moving to the left-hand side. Sorry, I'll give Ainsley Maitland-Niles a three, actually.
Wow.
Yeah, terrible. And also a three for Ser Kolasinac on the other side.
Seems harsh. I thought he was actually one of the more penetrative players from Arsenal.
He was good going forward, but every time he got into a forward possession where he was able to cross it into the box, his delivery was awful. I mean, if he would have been slightly more clinical in that sense, I think we'd have created at least three, four chances that Aubameyang and Lacazette could have hoovered up. So yeah, not good enough for me. One of the players I would actually consider getting rid of. I mean, considering we signed him on a free, you know, there must surely be a club out there that's willing to pay £10-20 million to take him away.
If you say so. I mean, I have yet to find them, but, you know, yeah. I mean, maybe they'll exist. I don't know.
Yeah, I hope so. Moving into midfield, Lucas Torreira is such a shame because he had such a good start to his Arsenal career. Everyone thought he was going to become a bit of a cult hero, but towards the end, he's really, really fallen off. And I don't really know why. I mean, he's still only young, 22, 23 years old. But
still learning. Last night, he's still adapting.
Last night, James, he wasn't good. And he was shipped off, actually, early in the second half.
What have you given him?
I've given him a four. Slightly improved, actually. And I've been saying this a lot on the James Gray Show. Granit Xhaka, he was one of the players that actually tried to dictate off the ball. Yeah, I mean, him along with the rest of the team defensively were not very good, but I thought Xhaka actually was imposing in that midfield. I've given him a six.
That is generous.
Yeah.
And well, moving further forward,
Mesut Ozil. I mean, you might as well just listen back to any player ratings, because I'm going to give Mesut Ozil below a five.
Just copy and paste the same.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, yeah, big game, Mesut Ozil, are two words that don't really go together that often.
How are you going to get rid of him?
That is the question, really.
Like, Ozil's for life, not just for Christmas. That's the problem, isn't it? Like, you just, well, like, he's like herpes. You just never get rid of him.
When you give him such a big contract, I mean, who's going to pay that? No one. I think, just looking at some of his stats, James, he created 27 passes during the time he was on. He's obviously got shipped off late.
27
passes, 84% accuracy.
That is so little.
It's not good enough for someone who's a number 10, is meant to link midfield to attack. Lacazette fed off scraps. I mean, should have had a penalty, I think. Just looking back at that one. Yeah, there was a bit of movement towards Kepa, but I still think there was enough to give the penalty.
It just looked a penalty, didn't it? Like,
yeah,
it just
it
looked a penalty.
But I'm not going to berate him too much. One of Arsenal's best players this season. I've given him a five.
Very generous.
That's about fair. Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang missed the one big chance really in the first half, which could have changed things. There was a half volley that went just wide. Again, like Aubameyang, he's great in flashes. I mean, he'll turn up and he'll score a couple of goals, but then he won't touch the ball for the rest of the game. I've given him a 3, actually. I won't touch on all the subs, but one I do want to touch on because it leads into my next point is Joe Willock. One of the youngsters I've actually seen down at the academy for a few years now, and he's a great talent. Came on and had a pretty good chance, to be honest with you. And just moving forward, I think he, along with a crop of youngsters that we've got coming through who are quite promising, that needs to be the direction that Arsenal need to go. Because as Lee Harper was saying earlier, we need about 4, 5, 6 players, and the budget is not going to be able to get that many.
Mike, I much as there are problems with the playing stuff, I think the whole club needs a rethink. Because when, you know, Petacek talking about the intensity of training sessions, I think that's exactly it. And I think that goes to the whole club. The whole intensity and tempo of Arsenal Football Club has been allowed to slow down. Yeah. And mediocrity has become an acceptable form of performance at Arsenal.
Yeah, do you know what it is, James? I mean, I think about the word identity. And if you think about it, in the first 10, you know, maybe stretch into 15 years of Arsene Wenger's reign, you'd say that Arsenal had an identity, a philosophy, but that has kind of seeped out. I mean, I feel sorry for Wenger in the sense of he had that big stadium to pay off. They didn't have much finances, so the purse strings had to be tightened. But if you look at now, that stadium's been paid off. We've got a new manager and there's no money coming in. And with the manager right now, would you say that he's implemented a philosophy on Arsenal? I wouldn't. I mean, there's been no visible improvement in the team. I mean, we finished on 7 points more than last season. Great. I mean, that's only one place in the league. Yeah. And that's with teams being so poor around us. The goals conceded the same. The goals scored are the same. Defensively, we're worse. I think the away record was pretty poor. And don't forget, last season, that's one of the worst seasons Arsenal have had in the Premier League for God knows how long, a long, long time. So I think what needs to happen is they need to rethink where they are in terms of identity. And the way they change that is obviously not by going out and spending a lot, because Stan Kroenke won't invest that kind of money into the club. They need to look towards the academy, bring through players that will make a difference. And fans will get excited about, because I think if you do bring young English talent through, fans will actually back them and they won't berate them as much. But what you have at Arsenal is a crop of players that don't take responsibility.
Hmm. And, you know, you talk about identity, and the word identity gets thrown around a lot in football. I don't like it that much. But what it means is having a standard, having a mission statement, having something that unites everyone and sticking to it. It's not just about having an identity. It's about that identity being important to the players involved, and about that identity being something that they stick to with rigorously high standards. Arsenal haven't had high standards for a long time. Frankly, they haven't had standards full stop.
This is Love Sport.
You've been listening to a podcast edition of The James Gray Show. Remember to leave us a rating and a review, but only nice ones. I don't take criticism well.